south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Just got an email from our man on the scene, the guy who wrote that famous little book called Fast Spanish, Jack Brett. Very brilliant guy. Also a professional engineer. And by the way, I'd have to say that as far as my expat insider seminars, the vast majority of the occupations of the people coming down are, you guessed it, engineers of one type or another. And why is that? Well, that's because logic prevails with engineers. With us, it's all about logic, math, history, probability, and repeatability. I say us because in a past life, I actually was an engineer. And I don't mean in a past life in a metaphysical sense. I'm talking about how most people have many chapters in their lives. And in my earlier chapters, I was an actual engineer. So the number of engineers at my Expat Insider seminars topped the list. That said, what kind of people come in at number two on the seminar list? Guess who? Real estate people. Yep, people who've seen the ups and downs and the big blowouts that occurred up in the States, they too see the ominous warnings and the train wreck that's coming on ahead. In other words, we've got some very smart people coming down to the seminars, and they know there's no wishing away what's coming down the pike. Anyway, it might seem surprising that so many engineers come down to my expat seminars, and the fact that I meet a lot of American gringo expat engineers on my own down here. And really, there's another reason that should surprise you too. Because when you think about it, what types of people are best able to handle big calamities? Who's most likely to be able to fix electrical wiring, a computer, a car, a water heater, a stove, a transmission line, etc.? Guess who? Engineers. Why? Because not only do they have the knowledge, they're born tinkerers. Definitely the guy you want to be with if you're stuck on a desert island. If you're stuck with a business, psychology, art, or drama major, then unfortunately you're probably going to die. So it should surprise you that engineers are leaving the U.S. in droves, since they're the ones that will suffer the least because they can rebuild after a calamity. However, when you think of who's most likely to have a plan B or even a plan C, that would be engineers too. However, when there's just so many engineers leaving the States or planning to leave, that sends another signal, a very ominous signal. Meaning, even engineers with all their technical and mechanical skills, the ones most likely to survive or tough it out in times of crisis, it's a fact they'd much rather be in Latin America or any place else but the States when the walls start tumbling down and chaos prevails. But where were we? Oh yeah, that email from Jack Brett, author of Fast Spanish. And I'll paraphrase this a bit. He says, hey, Johnny, there's this social justice warrior backlash thing going down in the U.S. right now. Then he gives me a link to the newspaper, the U.K. Independent, an article about social justice warriors complaining about articles and picketing on the streets and political correctness and all that. Then Jack says, Johnny, have you ever thought to do a show about the near total absence of social justice warriors, i.e. politically correct crusaders in Latin America? I said near absence because there are some exceptions. For example, there are pockets of nonprofit gringo organizations, not to mention all the hundreds of gringo and first world funded NGOs, that stands for non-governmental organization. And what they are is basically non-transparent tax write-offs for gringo groups up in the States. And what they do is they come down and agitate the locals and propagandize while giving away freebies to gather big crowds. And as they do that, they cultivate a PC mindset in the poor and indigenous people that was never there before, not even imagined in their wildest dreams. Though, it is a good marketing plan, I have to admit. Anyway, Johnny, diplomat that you are, been called a lot of things, but never a diplomat, I'm sure you could broach that subject without pissing off too many of the more thin-skinned gringos and gringas in your audience, whilst still capturing the attention of the great masses of gringos and gringas. I think mostly guys, who are pretty much disgusted too and primarily the targets of this stuff. Hell, Johnny, I was sick of all that PC crap back in the 1980s when I first started thinking about getting the hell out of the U.S. I guess I'm always just a little ahead of the curve. Regards, Jack Brett. Okay, Jack, I'll take a shot at it. I've got no advertisers to answer to or anyone that'll read me the riot act, so here it goes. Now, here in Latin America, you can always count on three things. First, you've got mañana time. That's a constant. Boy, is that an oxymoron. Then there's that famous lag time effect we're always talking about. And then there's that ever-present Latin kindness and happiness, which happens to have a very strong PC component. Now, do note that PC, or the words politically correct, even when translated into Spanish, is not part of their vernacular. The closest word they have in Spanish is diplomático, which means being diplomatic. Now, to put a kind of a soft spin on this, we'll get to the hard-ass tough stuff later. Social correctness in Latin America exists in the form of excessive politeness. Not to be confused with false politeness, you see that in every country everywhere, right? We can almost always tell when someone's being false with us. In fact, that's why I could never in a million years work the complaint counter of a customer service desk. Nope, there's not enough Prozac in the world for me to take that job. Yes, I digress, but I'm not so far off point here. Like I said, there's an excessive politeness that exists here in Latin America, and it's not bad. The first world could definitely use a dose of it. And for Latins, it exists because they're non-confrontational. They just don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Now, I'm really talking about excessive politeness on the job, in public, and on the street. However, when Latin people are at home and with the family, the situation can be quite different. We've all heard about that quote, Latin temper. Seems that total honesty is reserved for friends, family, and lovers behind closed doors. Now, don't get me wrong, it's a good thing not to want to hurt anyone's feelings, even to pump them up a bit when they're down. Come on, I always told my grandma she looked beautiful. And being that she was always the most beautiful 94-year-old in the room, in that context, I told no fibs. But concerning Latin America, in a purely political sense, that is, dealing with politics, there is no correctness. That is, when you're speaking with a person informally. In other words, when you're at someone's house or at a party or talking to someone over a coffee or a tequila, your Latin friends and associates will agree with your assessment of their rotten political system. In fact, they're often more aggravated than you are about it. In fact, just the other day, I heard a Latin friend of mine say this in Spanish. He shook his head and said, I really hate my government. All we ever get is a bunch of pus-sucking, lazy-ass thieves to grace our poop-stained halls of Congress. Now, for some reason, and I just don't get it, they think the U.S. and the U.S. Congress, well, they're noble, just, and squeaky clean for the most part, and all other governments should aspire to that. And a big reason for that is the fact that if you're down here, you'll notice that all the news that filters down from the first world to the Latin TV and media are feeds coming from the usual suspects, ABC, NBC, CNN, etc. So U.S. news is censored before it even hits the media here, too. And as for U.S. political scandals, they almost never make it to the Latin media. And why would Latins even care anyway? They're so conditioned to their own daily political scandals, they're numb to it. They think it's normal. So when it comes to first world scandals, the media down here barely reports it. However, with Trump in the race, Latin first world news reporting has changed drastically. Never in my 27 years down here has the Latin media spent so much time blasting a U.S. candidate. In fact, before Trump, the only time Latin media would cover politics in the U.S. at all is if there was an issue involving immigrants and illegal aliens. So now, for the very first time, at least as long as I've been down here, Latins are afraid of a presidential candidate, Trump, because they think he'll actually do what he says. So he gets his shot practically every day in the news, and of course they're slamming him 100% of the time. But where was I? Oh yeah, we're talking about Latin politicians now. Like I said, one-on-one and in private, Latins will tell you how they hate their pinhead politicians. That's when the unending hypocrisy kicks in. Because you see, when the same pissed-off Latins happen to run into one of their local politicians, for example, at Sears, Walmart, or Costco, get ready for a monumental ass-kissing slobberfest. I've seen it many times myself. However, I remember back in the States, I saw it a few times there, too. Pretty disgusting. Anyway, let's talk about Latin political correctness in a gender sense. Now, because Latin America is ruled by men and it's a very macho society, women are conditioned to a high level of machoism. It's such a way of life that it seems there's not much awareness of it. Sure, I see the occasional op-ed piece in a newspaper, almost always penned by a wealthy Latin woman who generally pops back and forth to my jammy to do her shopping, and because she speaks English, she's aware of the social issues up in the States, and she'll write op-ed pieces in Latin newspapers that no one will read, decrying the sad state of machoism in her home country. Now, if you bring that gender equality topic up amongst Latin ladies, 95%+ of them will shrug their shoulders and say, well, that's the way it is. And the other 3 or 4% of Latin ladies, they're the ones attending university. So they're exposed a little bit anyway to the idea that there's justice and equality, kinda, in the first world. By the way, did you know that only about 4% of Latin Americans attend university, public or private, and only around 2% manage to get a degree, as opposed to up in the first world, where about 40% of Americans, anyway, have bachelor's degrees, which is why the average bachelor degree up where you live will get you a job behind the counter at Starbucks. Oh, and by the way, up in the States, only 14% of all the bachelor's degrees earned are in the hard sciences. That would be biology, chemistry, math, computer science, and engineering, etc. And these days, having a degree like that is one of the few ways a graduate can have a chance at a middle or upper middle class life. By the way, in Germany, about 30% of all bachelor's degrees are in the hard sciences, double that of the US. But you probably knew that already. So what about Latin America? Well, would you believe that only about 5% of all the bachelor's degrees are in the hard sciences? No surprise there. And no matter how politically incorrect this sounds, Latins have yet to produce, create, or invent, much less apply for or receive any patents that have had any particular effect on the world as we know it at all. And if you're watching this on YouTube right now, you'll see a chart that shows just that. And it's amazing to note that Latin America has well over a half a billion people, slightly less than twice as many as the US. But get this, for every 240 patents that are filed in the United States, there's one patent filed in Latin America. Did you get that? One patent filed. But where were we? Oh yeah, talking about political correctness in Latin America in a gender sense. So bottom line, Latin America is a land of extreme hypocrisy. Everyone freely disses the government and those flatulent asses that grace the stanky halls of Congress. The public knows politicians are crooks and are stealing them blind, noting that they receive insanely high salaries to do so. Meanwhile, nearly all grunt workers in the private sector would give their right arm and a case of tequila for a government job. So, if offered one of those government sack jobs by corrupt Uncle Tulio, they'd take it in a New York minute or a Miami segundo. Now, Jack, in his email, talks about that social justice warrior phenomena up in the States, saying basically he's had enough of it. And thankfully, as he points out, due to extreme lag time and perhaps indifference, it really hasn't caught up to Latin America yet. So there are practically no Latin social justice warriors yet. But there are always a few entitled children of the rich who spent some time at US universities. Now, they're not the usual gringo wannabes because they've got all the money in the world. And they've adopted all the gringo college student bad habits too. Like, for example, rebelling against their parents who are footing the bill. They often dress like modern-day punk rockers or goths, even hippies, with plenty of piercings, tattoos, weird colored hair, and the torn jeans and shirts and stuff with all the expensive designer labels. Made, of course, by an indigenous labor force they will never acknowledge as equal or even mingle with. Though they'll give lip service to and even shout out about indigenous rights. Now remember, this is the class of entitled kids that were brought up by indigenous nannies and cleaning ladies and such. Oh, I know the type all right. I see them hanging around Starbucks and university coffee shops sucking down lattes, talking about how capitalism has screwed up the world while they plan that next shopping trip to Miami. Oh, and they're art, sociology, drama, and psychology majors. All of them. Oh, and while they're dissing capitalism, while their bodyguards wait patiently by the Range Rover in the parking lot, if quizzed, they wouldn't even know a decent definition of capitalism, socialism, communism, or feudalism. Which, by the way, is how many of their family fortunes were made. A kind of feudalism. Nope, they don't have to work. Just socialize, hang out at Starbucks, go to cafes and bars and restaurants, and at night, pick up some designer drugs and hit the latest greatest discos or pop into a house party or DJ club. And not to worry if you crash Daddy's Range Rover. He's got two or three of them. Oh, and you might want to know, there are plenty of designer drugs available. They can be had at the usual places, DJ house parties, the university, etc. Entrance to the hip clubs, $5 or $10 at the door. Ecstasy and designer drugs, also about $10 a pop. And at those prices, about 95% or more of the sweaty masses will be excluded. Thankfully, that 2% of the population is so entitled and lazy they'll never pen a letter to the editor, or to any rag whatsoever, concerning the injustices in their society. Which start, by the way, in their own kitchens and with their own nannies and cleaning ladies. So, bottom line, those college kids and young adults, the elite entitled children of the 1 or 2%, They pay lip service to inequality, social injustice, etc., but at the same time, benefit from it. After all, their little worlds wouldn't exist if there truly were equality in Latin America. However, as Jack pointed out, there are first world NGOs and do-gooders coming down and stirring things up. Not surprisingly, they've found if they organize focus groups and meetings, no one will come unless they give out freebies. The masses just aren't interested, unless there's something in it for them. They'd rather go to their job, get a paycheck, and eat, than tote protest signs in front of the presidential palace or in the Central Park. Okay, let's change gears a bit. Remember last show when we were talking about Mexico? Well, here's a little news out of Mexico. You won't find this up in the first world papers. It talks about what a terrible place Mexico is to do business on the books. The article is entitled, Why Businesses Are Leaving Mexico in Droves. That's a loose translation. It's in Spanish, you know. According to the Business Cámara Americana in Mexico, that would be kind of like the Business and Manufacturers Association, it starts by saying, along with all the other problems facing Mexican businesses, come these new threats, this time coming from the internet, in the form of virtual extortions, robberies, and web attacks, focusing mainly on company logistics and supply chains. According to this report, it says the major difficulty is in moving our products and materials around Mexico, since internet criminals can now find out our logistics chain. That would be where our trucks, supplies, products, and parts are moving throughout Mexico. And based on our own internal questionnaires and polls, we found that fully 56% of Mexican businesses polled, companies that ship physical parts and supplies, are common victims of virtual extortion, directed from smartphones, cafe internets, and other electronic media. It says in the last year or so, as never before, criminals are attacking our logistics chains and committing text messaging aggressions and threats against our employees. It says now criminals have a new method that instead of actually breaking into our installations and stealing data regarding deliveries, logistics, and such, they extort that information from our employees. Worse yet, it says, for larger companies with many employees, sindicatos, that would be the employee unions themselves, are involved in the extortions and robberies. They do it by calling for a walkout or a strike until their extortion demands are met. Then the article says, of the 330 member businesses who answered that questionnaire, 50% of them believe the police and corrupt government authorities are in on it too. Which is why this report says, even as the Mexican population grows year over year, unfortunately, established companies and businesses are seeing the opposite trend. Businesses are closing and moving out of the country instead of looking for ways to expand within Mexico. Okay, it's me again. Now, even though this article talks mostly about medium and large-sized companies in Mexico, the question again is, do you want to live, work, play, and or do business in Mexico? Oh, and here's another thing gringos and expats fail to realize when it comes to Mexico. There are at least 40 million Mexicans living in the U.S. right now. The fact is, one out of four people born in Mexico are now up in the U.S., most of them, of course, illegally. So then, all you gringos and expats living in Mexico might ask yourself, when the next big event comes and that really big piece of crap hits the fan and the blades break, what do you think those 40 or so million Mexicans living up in America are going to do? Well, I'll tell you what, they have a plan B and you're not going to like it. They'll move back down to Mexico where life is easy, things are cheap, and the sun's always shining. Now, if you look at the statistics up in the States, about 95% of Americans know things are going bad, but they have no plan B. All that can be said is they're in a state of denial. And about 10 million Americans, they say, about 3% or more, have a plan B. In other words, they're stocking stuff away, doing that prepper thing, kinda. Now, unfortunately, a lot less than 1% of Americans have set up the best plan B scenario of all. That would be leaving the country. Probably more like 0.1%. That would be 1 out of 1,000 U.S. citizens. And that might be a vast overestimate. Anyway, if you guys and gals living in Mexico don't think there's not going to be a huge rush of displaced Mexicanos returning to the homeland, you got another thing coming. If you doubt it, listen to this. A few years back, I was in Mexico and I attended a 50th anniversary party. Cool, huh? An old Mexican couple married 50 years. Don't ask me how I got invited, but I got invited. Now, this was a couple who owned a pretty substantial farm. Now, they weren't rich in any sense. They didn't have any helicopters or nice cars. Just an old pickup truck and a rusted tractor or two. However, they had probably 50 acres or so, and they were doing pretty good, growing milpa, that's corn, and frijoles, and a lot of other stuff. Anyway, I went to the reception at their house, maybe 80 to 100 people there. Soon enough, I ended up sitting right next to the mom, the anniversary lady, and that's when things got interesting. While we were exchanging pleasantries, I found out that she'd had, now you're not going to believe this, I know, but I'm going to tell you anyway, 23 kids with the same guy, her husband, of course. Okay, so we're at this party, and you'd think all of her kids would have shown up. Well, not quite. Well, you see, three had died as infants, so that left 20, right? And get this, 8 were up in the U.S. They'd all snuck in, illegally, of course. And how'd they know that? Well, I didn't have to ask because looking at that rustic farm family and their resources, they could never have met the immigration requirements of the U.S. to get in legally. That would be, you know, having a credit card with at least a $2,000 maximum, a letter from your employer that you'd been working there at least 3 years continuously, bank statements, letters of reference, police reports, utility bills, all the stuff the U.S. requires from a third world foreigner to get a tourist visa, which is why it's been estimated that only one in about 30 Mexicans can meet those requirements legally. And that's just for a 90-day tourist visa. That's not for permanent or even temporary residency in the U.S. to live for extended periods of time, of which only around 1 in 200 Mexicans qualify. So then how is it that 1 in 4 people born in Mexico are now living up in the U.S.? Take a guess. Anyway, the 50th anniversary lady told me with great pride that 8 of her kids were living up in the States. Then she went out of the room, came back, and proceeded to introduce me to 5 of them. Wait a minute, how could that be? If they're up in the States, what are they doing at this party in Mexico? Well, that's because they go back and forth at will. I knew that, of course, and you did too. There's a revolving door. And when you see those pictures of those poor Mexican migrants schlepping it across the border, getting robbed, being taken advantage by coyotes, dying of thirst, well, those are the dirt poor Mexicans that have run out of dough. However, the ones that have been in the States for a while, that are making dough and putting some money away, sending remises back and such, well, they've got connections stateside and can cross the borders with ease. No midnight crawls through deserts or leaping over barbed wire fences for those with dough. They just pay a guy, get in a van, and next thing you know, they're at a Greyhound bus station clone across the border in Mexico. And from there, it's off to that 50th anniversary party or whatever. But that's not the point. Not even close. Here's the point. She told me that 7 out of 8 of her kids up in the States were sending back remises monthly to her and her husband. They were using those remises to build themselves their retirement homesteads in the homeland, Mexico, of course. She said her kids up in the States were doing what most Mexicans up in the States do. It's what we'd call a plan B, and for them, I guess, a plan C. Plan B for them was sneaking into the States, and once accomplished, they are onto their plan C, building a nice Mexican middle-class home for retirement purposes. However, a place back home also served as a nice insurance plan if things got tough and they got deported. Then they'd have a nice place to go back to when they got shipped back home, which in the past really wasn't much of a worry since the border was so easily penetrated. But now with Trump in the picture, it's not so certain. So, all you gringos and expats living in Mexico, are you prepared for that kind of reverse emigration? Tens of millions of gringoized Mexicans hurrying across the border if Trump gets elected or to escape the big-time crash when it hits? I doubt you're thinking about that eventuality, but you should. Why? Well, the population of Mexico is about 120 million. And if there's a rush of, let's say, 30 or just 20 million Mexicans back to the homeland, that means for every 5 or 6 people in Mexico right now, there'll be another person there, another mouth to feed, a bigger strain on food and resources, more demand on, well, everything, transportation, water, fuel, utilities. So, all you listeners out there living in Mexico, are you ready for that? Now, when the crap hits the fan up north, there won't be such a rush at all to other Latin countries like Honduras, Nicaragua, Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, Panama, Costa Rica, and the rest of South America. They have nowhere near the same high percentage of family members living up in the States. So, there's one more unknown and virtually undiscussed problem you can throw into the mix. Another reason why I'm no fan of going to Mexico. Oh, and just one more thing about that 50th anniversary party. I said to the lady, 50 years married, that's tremendous. What's your secret? Then she laughed and said, for one thing, we live out in the county and there aren't any cantinas within a couple of kilometers to tempt my husband. She laughed when she said that. And for the second thing, she said, you learn to be tolerant and you overlook transgressions. And I said, like what, for instance? She said, well, like the fact that my husband had an affair with my sister and my niece. But we're together, she says. We got past all that, and we've had a good 50 years. So does that throw you a bit? Well, it did me. And all I could think of was that if there was a gringa lady sitting next to me, I don't think that conversation would have ended with a smile. But like I said, we're talking about a very macho society down here, and you're going to see and hear stuff like that all the time. Just a word of warning. And now, one more thing about Mexico, since we've been hot on that subject lately. A report just came out today from Pemex, that's the Mexican state-owned oil company. It says for the first quarter of 2016, the oil company lost $7,693 million. A big loss, but not quite as much as they lost in the same period last year. Now, you might say big deal that all the big oil companies are taking huge hits since oil dropped below 50 bucks a barrel. Well, the fact is, Pemex logged in its 15th straight quarterly loss, the biggest continuous run of red ink for any oil company in the world besides PDV. That's Petróleo de Venezuela, the rotten to the core state-owned Venezuelan oil company. Now, a related report states that government-owned oil companies like PDV and Pemex have typically 2 to 3 times as many employees as equivalent private sector oil companies. How'd that happen? It's unheard of, you know, that a company can run 15 straight quarters of multi-billion dollar losses. The only way that can happen is if the government runs it, with the difference made up by taxpayers, of course. Now, some time ago, an old-time expat gringo explained Mexico's economy to me. He said it's one quarter narco, one quarter tourism, a quarter is Pemex oil and gas, and one quarter remises coming from illegals up in the U.S. So, do you still think Mexico is the place to be? Well, I do still like the Yucatan an awful lot. However, when the poop hits the fan up north and the blades break, I wouldn't want to be there. Okay, we're getting towards the end now. Time to remind you that I'm having another Expat Insider Seminar in January 2017. So, if you want to get on the early bird discount list, just send me an email. I'm sure this one's going to be sold out in a hurry. And don't forget to hit www.thenewexpat.com for Master Expat Blogger John Galt. And of course, do check out my YouTube channel. If you want to see Latin America the way I see it, do check it out. And don't forget to subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.